ਸੰਗੇ ਇਸੀ ਬਾਕੀ ਵੇਦਾਂ ਦੇ ਸਾਹਮਣੇ ਮਾਰਾ ਸ਼ੁਰੂ ਪਾਰ Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Paribhati Kacharya Stout Arasara Shiv Shemar is the Divine Grace of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Maharaj Guru Bhupari Vedanta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Tiskan Thandu Acharya Srila Bhupari Ki Dhamacharya Srila Haridhar Thakur Ki Fame Chekhosi Krishna Shri Kana Prabhu Nityananda Shri Raita Gadara Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Shri Shri Arha Krishna Gagaminath Shyam Kundra Rakundi Giri Gavadhan Ki Shri Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Navarvi Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Ayodhya Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Mathura Dham Ki Jai Shri Shri Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Tulasi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Pangamaya Ki Jai Jamanamaya Ki Jai Gaur Premanand Hari Rama Sankirtan Ki Jai Shri Shri Brihad Maranga Ki Jai Shishi Gauritai ki jai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shishi Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shishi Bhakti Ananta Manadam ki jai, Shama Veta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. All glory is to the assembled devotees. All glory is to the assembled devotees. All glory is to the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shishi Guru and Shigur. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Namaskritam Naram Chaivam Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Dato Jayamudirayet Nastapra Yeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Tamashloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and purports by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, third canto, chapter 12, Creation of the Kumaras and Others, text number 1. Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Iti.
Iti.
Te.
Te.
Varnita.
Varnita.
Shata.
Shata.
Kalakya.
Kalakya.
Paramatmanaha.
Paramatmanaha.
Mahima.
Mahima.
Veda Garbhota.
Veda Garbhota.
Yatta Sri Sin.
Yatta Sri Sin.
Nibodhame, Maitreya
Uvacha,
Iti Te Varnita Kshata,
Iti Te
Varnita Kshata, Kalakya Paramatmana,
Kalakya Paramatmana,
Kalakya Paramatmana, Mahima Veda Garbhota, Mahima Veda Garbhota, Itasrakshini Bodhame, Itasrakshini Bodhame,
Itasrakshini
Bodhame, Itasrakshini Bodhame, Shri Maitreya
said,
Iti, thus.
Say
unto you, Varanita, describe, Shata, O Vidura, Kalaakya, by the name of eternal time, Paramatmana,
of the super soul,
Mahima,
glorious,
Veda Garba,
Lord Brahma,
the reservoir of the Vedas. Atta, hereafter. Yatta, as it is. Asrakshi, did create. Nibodha,
just try to understand.
May,
from me.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Sri Maitreya said, O learned Vidura, so far as I have explained to you the glories of the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His feature of Kala, now you can hear from me about the creation of Brahma, the reservoir of Vedic knowledge. Repeat responsively. Sri Maitreya said,
Sri Maitreya said,
O learned Vidura,
O learned Vidura,
So far I have explained to you, the glories of the form,
of
the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his feature of Kala. Now you can hear from me
about
the creation of Brahma, the reservoir of all Vedic knowledge. And there's no purport, so I'll read one more verse, text number 2. Sasar jagrinditami sram matatami sram adikrit mahamoham chamoham cha tamas chagyana vrittaya. Sasarja, created. Agre, at first. Anda tamisram, sense of death. Ata, then. Tamisram, anger upon frustration. Adikrit, all these. Mahamohan, ownership of enjoyable objects. Cha, also. Moham, illusory conception. Cha, also. Tama, darkness in self-knowledge. Cha, as well as. Agyana, nation. Vitaya, engagements. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Brahma first created the nascent engagements, like deception, the sense of death, anger after frustration, the sense of false ownership, and the illusory bodily conception or forgetfulness of one's real identity. We can just read that responsibly. Brahma first created the nascent engagements. Like self-deception. The sense of death. Anger after frustration. The sense of false ownership. And the illusory bodily conception. Or forgetfulness of one's real identity. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Before the factual creation of the living entities in different varieties of species, the conditions under which a living being in the material world has to live were created by Brahma. Unless a living entity forgets his real identity, it is impossible for him to live in the material conditions of life. Therefore, the first condition of material existence is forgetfulness of one's real identity. And by forgetting one's real identity, one is sure to be afraid of death. Although a pure living soul is deathless and birthless. This false identification with material nature is the cause of false ownership of things which are offered by the arrangement of superior control. All material resources are offered to the living entity for its peaceful living and for the discharge of the duties of self-realization in conditioned life. But due to false identification, the conditioned soul becomes entrapped by the sense of false ownership of the property of the Supreme Lord. It is evident from this verse that Brahma himself is a creation of the Supreme Lord, and the five kinds of nescience which condition the living entities in material existence are creations of Brahma. It is simply ludicrous to think that the living entity is equal with the Supreme Being, when one can understand that the conditioned souls are under the influence of Brahma's magic wand. Patanjali also accepts that there are five kinds of nations, as mentioned herein. Om Maginati Miranda Sagananjana Salakaya Chatsurum Militam Jena Tasma Eshuja Venamaha Sri Chaitana Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Pirati Svaparati. The material condition of life is one of forgetfulness, or sometimes it's described as a sleeping condition. There are three conditions of the living soul, the human soul. That is deep sleep, the dreaming state, and the awakened state. In the dreaming or sleeping state, one is not fully aware. In the awakened state, Yanisha Sarvabhutanam Tasyam Jagrati Bhutani. Everyone is awakened to their real identity. In the conditioned state or the sleeping state, we are not only forgetful of our condition, but as Prabhupada is pointing out, we sense that we are the owners and the proprietors the masters of all we survey. Krishna consciousness means gradually awakening. It's a gradual awakening of the real identity. Just as a dream is temporary, but it seems real, it seems so real that there are sometimes reactions in dreams, sometimes there's perspiration, sometimes murmuring, sometimes other acts, other bodily acts take place. And it appears to be very, very real. Sometimes people suffer from nightmares, or they're having a nice dream and they wish, oh, I wish I could just stay in bed all day and dream like that. And sometimes they try to do it. But this is the condition of material nature. Everything can be very attractive, and at the same time, or at another time, it can be very revolting. And one tries to escape from that which is revolting, and one tries to perpetuate that which is pleasing. And the unfortunate thing is that when it is pleasing, time seems to go by very fast. And when we are in a pleasing or uncomfortable or diseased condition, time seems to go very slow. I don't know if you ever waited for a bus out in the cold, but the minutes seem like hours and hours. And then when time flies when you're having fun, they say, it just seems to go by in a second. So many people are taking their holidays in the Seychelles and the 2 weeks for which they saved all year to go, it's just gone in a flash. So this is the dreaming state. One tries to perpetuate the good dreams and avoid the nightmares, the bad dreams. Krishna consciousness is the process of awakening us from this dream of unreality, this dream of mastering everything, the dream of what appears to be reality but which is actually illusion. This word moha, illusion, is used over and over again. Icha dvesha samutena tanva mohana bhavata, moha, illusion. It's so important to know what illusion is and to be able to distinguish what is reality from this illusion, that this is, in one sense, the whole problem of existing in material life. Everyone, Prabhupada said this one time, everyone is thinking that I'm the master of all I survey, whether one is a pauper, whether one is a king. Everybody thinks like this. Even the animal species, like the dog, it's always protecting its master. As soon as there is some incursion, someone crosses over the boundary, it's defending. So it has this sense of provision. This is my turf. You can't enter my turf. And if you do, I'll attack you. So everybody is actually in this kind of illusion. This is my life. It's my world. It's my country. It's my body. And I'm going to do what I like with it. We were discussing the other day how it's become now an issue of rights, whether one can abort the fetus within the womb. It's a matter of women's rights. It's not a matter of whether there's life in there or not. It's a matter of the right we have as human beings. So everyone has concerns about what their rights are. And in today's world, the rights seem to extend to just about everything. I have a right to kill myself. I have a right to kill my child. I have a right to kill another person. If you kill another person, maybe you'll go to jail for a while and then get out again. It happens all the time. Kill somebody else. So in this dreaming state, morality and ethics, as it has been traditionally known, is no longer evident. And therefore, in Kali Yuga, everything is kind of spiraling downward. Everybody believes that morality is relative under this grand illusion. So these are the different, there are different types of illusions. Kam, krodh, lobh, mada, moha, matsarya. Another time, moha is used. Mada, madness, illusion, and envy. Lust, anger, and greed. Madness, illusion, and envy. These are the garbhasuras, or the different forms that attack us. And as it's mentioned here, Lord Brahma creates these things in the beginning, like anger after frustration. We also read in the Bhagavad Gita that when the senses are not gratified, then there's this feeling of frustration. When we try to get something and we can't get it, then there is frustration, and from frustration there is anger. And when the mind becomes angry, it begins to forget everything and just gradually loses all of its equilibrium. And there's no peace in the world. So this is the reason. There's constant illusion. Just like a dream. A dream is illusion. So in the very beginning, Lord Brahma, in order to make it possible for someone to live in this material world, creates forgetfulness, or creates the illusion. Everything comes from God. That we know. And this is where so many people are in illusion about what is God and what is the theological mission or message that I'm trying to follow as a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim or a Baptist or a Zoroastrian or a Sikh or whatever. People are, if the question is asked in depth, what is the nature of evil, for example, it's very difficult to explain. People, psychologists have written books, why good things happen to bad people, and they give an opinion like, well, God is all good and wants nothing but good for people, but he's not all powerful, therefore bad things happen. He really wishes that these bad things wouldn't happen, but he's powerless because he doesn't have the power. So they're trying to figure out why things happen in this material world the way they do. But we understand that actually they originally, everything, even evil, it comes from God. There's a there's a conversation Prabhupada had with an airline pilot who came to sit with him in the first class section. And Prabhupada said he was very intelligent because he was asking, he talks about this in a lecture, what is evil and where does it come from? So Prabhupada said that evil is the backside of God. So just like you're standing facing the sun and there's a shadow behind you. So that is the backside. And he was explaining this to the airplane pilot who's going flying west chasing the sun and went flying east going through day and night. So he could understand that there's darkness and that there's light in the world. And that everything originates from the Supreme Being. So in order to subsist, to exist in this material world, one actually has to forget the horrors of many millions of past lives and births and deaths. The horror of death, the horror of birth. And for a little second, the living entity is given a glimpse of a reminder right before birth of how much suffering that living entity has undergone and vows not to do it again. But then after the pain of birth, everything again is forgotten. If one were to remember, it would be very hard. It would be impossible, actually, to live with that burden of suffering. So Krishna, or God, has very kindly taken away that remembrance so that one can live in this material world and not have to remember all the pain and suffering one has undergone before. So Brahma has created self-deception, sense of death, anger after frustration, a sense of false ownership. We actually think, we're convinced that we own things. And because we're convinced that we own things, it's possible to go on in material life without being greatly pained. So this illusion is very powerful. And Krishna is called Madan Mohan, or he is the one who can attract all of the illusory things and purify them. And Madan Mohan Mohini, the name of Radharani, the one who can attract Krishna, is even more powerful than Krishna in that sense. So there's a story in Vrindavan that people all remember. There's a hill upon which the Madan Mohan temple is built. And part of this story gives the reason why the temple was called Madan Mohan. This temple, how many of you have been to Vrindavan and seen the Madan Mohan temple, the very beautiful temple? That's on a hill called Dwasa Ditya Tila. And as you know, it's just overlooking the Kaliya Ghat where Krishna subdued the snake Kaliya and the noxious fumes and poisons that were emanating from him and creating so much toxic atmosphere that even the birds flying over the lake would become poison and fall in. So after Krishna subdued Kaliya, he was feeling a little cold dancing in the water. At least everyone thought he was feeling cold. So he went up to the hill upon which this temple is built, Vasudeva Tila, and to dry off. And at that time, 12 suns arose in the sky to dry him off. Yes, after all, the Supreme Lord needed to get dried off, so why not? And this hill was called Dvasa Aditya Tila, Vadvasa Aditya Tila, which means the hill of the 12 suns. Aditya means the sun, Vadas, the hill of the 12 suns. So he was dried off there. And it is also said that sometime around that time, Cupid, personified Cupid, who has these different illusory arrows, like touch, taste, sight, and sound, etc., was wanting to test Krishna. And he was seeing that all the gopis would sometimes faint in ecstasy. They would faint. And when he was doing the Kaliya demon, some of Krishna's followers were fainting in fear that he would be subdued by the snake. So he said, I'm going to see if I can attract Krishna with my arrow. This is kind of an allegorical story. So he poised his arrow and began to focus on the target, which is what all good bowmen do. They meditate, actually. They have to meditate on the target so they can hit it very accurately. So as he began to meditate on the beautiful form of Krishna with his very potent five illusory senses and meditated on this beautiful form, he fainted in ecstasy. He couldn't attract Krishna. But Radharani can attract Krishna. So this illusion can be purified and used in a purified way. And Krishna can remove all the illusory effects of the creations of Brahma. Like self-deception. Also, it's discussed that this illusion is one of the principal defects of living entities. This is one of the key elements we understand, that one comes under illusion. One is mistaken. One cheats. And the senses are imperfect. These are the four, what is Prabhupada called, the four defects of a living entity. One businessman, the fellow who owns Radio Shop, apparently got an Isha Upanishad in one of the airports. And he wrote a book. And in his book, he quotes the four defects of the living entities from the introduction of Isha Upanishad and attributes them to Srila Prabhupada. So this defect of illusion is one of the most common things that we encounter. Even as we progress on the path of devotional service, we find it's very easy to mistake one thing for another. Very, very easy to see how imperfect our senses are. We look at something, we look at a horse and it looks like a cow. We look at the sky and think it's cloudy when it's sunny. So this is the great illusion that people labor under in order to exist in this material world. So one of the things Brahma created was self-deception. What is self-deception? It's the false sense of who I am. I think that I am a body, and if I get if I win a race, I feel very happy. If I see a gray hair, I feel very unhappy. Everybody is believing that I am this body, and this is self-deception. It's necessary for one to see oneself as the body in order to progress and be happy. The sense of death, this is another thing that people are afraid of. And one of the most wonderful things about the sense of death, as Maharaj Yudhisthira says, is that although people fear it, it is their greatest fear, still they are able to forget about it and move on as if it doesn't exist or that it won't affect them, even though they've seen so many friends and relatives and other people around them all pass away. So this sense of death is also a very wondrous thing. But it creates fear or bias in the living entity. And it's one of the factors of conditional life. And it's one of the reasons people work so hard to save, to acquire, and to pass on whatever they can acquire to their posterity. This sense of death, that they somehow have to accumulate material things and pass them on. The sense of false proprietorship. Krishna claims Sarva Loka Maheshwara in the Bhagavad Gita, that I am the proprietor, the supreme enjoyer of everything, Voktaram Jagatapasam, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. And yet, even though we don't own anything, we come into the world naked, we go out of the world naked, we believe that everything that's around us is ours to own and to exploit and to use. In fact, that's, we might consider, the major problem with the pollution that exists in the world today. It's been put down, essentially, after many years of research and study, to overconsumption. That because we think we need so many things, and there's so much plastic, everything is packaged in plastic now, that people are no longer proud of their world. They can't find any family entertainment. They can't find a lake or a stream or river to go swimming in because it's so polluted. They can't find good air to breathe. I was reading once that people that work in these office buildings that are air-conditioned, I guess most of them are now, they don't get any proper oxygen. So they start bringing plants to work. Many people bring plants and they put it on their desk so they can get some oxygen, because the plants are supposed to exude oxygen. So it's very difficult, even in a day-to-day, 8-hour-a-day place, to breathe properly. And this is due to forgetfulness of who is the owner of everything. Actually, Krishna owns everything, and we are borrowing these plumes for some time. But because we think we own them all, and everything is ours, everything is being exploited. The animals, the trees, the lakes, the streams. And therefore, the even people who are not religious or don't even believe in God, they think that the world is extremely polluted. and they don't know what to do about it. And one of the interesting things that took place at a meeting of scientists in Moscow about 10 years ago was that they were present, and this was only scientists like Carl Sagan and Stephen Jay Gould, leading anthropologists and promoters of the scientific establishment. They were saying that it appears that there's going to be a lot of trouble downwind, and they were talking about the nuclear winter and increasing pollution. So one of their conclusions, in which they penned and they signed afterwards, was that the religious groups of the world should try to influence their parishioners to lead a more traditional life based on the principles of their religious traditions, which in the past lived in a way that God was more the center of life. They lived in a way that was more voluntarily austere. They lived in a way that didn't depend on factories and overconsumption and so on. So the irony of this was that these were the same people, are the same people, that are promoting the fact that there is no God, and that if there is no God, that there is nothing intrinsically good about the world. It's all come about by an occurrence, a chance occurrence of the interaction of electromagnetic or molecular forces. But this is the philosophy that they write about extensively. And this is the very philosophy which has gotten them into this problem that they're facing, like a nuclear winter and disease which is going unchecked practically, and so many other social problems that exist, so many physical problems, so many diseases. And yet they were begging almost the religious organizations to reinstate some kind of values of simplicity and voluntary austerity and living in a way where God, who they don't like very much, who they don't want to write about because most of them are professed atheists or nominal believers, to the extent that we want at least to not be pariahs in society as scientists, because they're sometimes criticized. So this is the great dilemma which everyone finds themselves in thinking that they own, that they have the right to exploit nature. So whether it's the animals or the trees or the water or the plants or the air, because there's no sense of God being there, there's no sense of the Paramatma, there's no education about the soul, they continue to, as the Bhagavad Gita says, perform horrible acts that are ultimately meant to destroy the world. Now, it's not that they're sitting around in smoke-filled rooms planning how to destroy the world. They don't really want to do that. But they're performing acts. They're under this great illusion of Maya that somehow they're going to solve all the problems. And what's happened is that instead of solving them, they're creating more. Or this is called Maya Sukaya, that solutions to the problems present greater problems than the original problems. And then you have the case of Maya Sukaya, or the great illusion. When Prabhupada was in Los Angeles, once he was talking about how in a lecture, he had to go to the doctor. So the doctor was in the San Fernando Valley somewhere, and it was a one-hour drive. So he was lamenting the fact that with all the modern conveniences, it takes an hour to go and see a doctor. So this is exactly what has happened. The cars were built to speed up everything so you could get to one place faster than in a horse and carriage. And then there weren't enough roads. So then the roads had to be built. More roads had to be built. More rock had to be exhumed from the ground. More petroleum had and its exhaust had to go into the air. And then you had, you know, more vehicles in the air. And then it created so much pollution in the air that they had to create smog control devices to stop the pollution going into the air, and that became more expensive, so people weren't very happy about that. And now they're using huge quantities of petroleum, and they're not very happy about that, but they don't know what to do about it because they have to have their cars. I mean, even we have to have our cars. We can't do it without our cars. Of course, in the end, we want to teach people that they don't really, I mean, we are teaching people that they don't really need these things in the end. Well, we're employing these things in the service of Krishna so that they can learn what ultimately life is like, and that the sense of false proprietorship and the illusory bodily conception, the forgetfulness of one's real identity, are the real cause of all the problems in the world. So these things were created by Lord Brahma, and they give a very complete picture. Not only is there a solution, but there's a problem. And what is the root cause of this problem? The root cause is there in this false sense of proprietorship. In the Isha Upanishad, it is said that society has to be God-centered. Isya vasyam idam sarvam jat kincham jagat cham jagat tena jagtena punjita. Everything that exists within this world is owned and controlled by the Lord. And therefore, one should accept only those things which are set aside as his quota, and not other things, knowing well to whom they belong. So this, then, is the complete picture. The complete picture, the complete creation, is given with the understanding that first of all, everything belongs to Krishna, or everything belongs to God. That's the complete picture, or the complete understanding. And the illusory conceptions of life, which have to be there in order for us to exist, are not our real dimension. So devotional service is a process of training by which one can understand what is my real self, what happens at death, what is anger, who is the real owner of everything, what is the illusory or bodily conception of life, and what is my real identity. So there are all the antitheses of these five things of illusion that Brahma has created. So the living entity ultimately has its free will to choose to remain in illusion, or to be a slave to this illusion, or to engage in devotional service, which is freedom. Freedom from the different entrapments that Maya has created, that even Krishna ultimately, originally, created through Lord Brahma, so that one could exist in this material world. So he's always beckoning us, the conditioned souls. Krishna is. He's looking for opportunities. We were reading in one of Prabhupada's purports in the fourth canto, where the story of Paranjan is discussed, how he's looking for opportunities to entice or to beckon the conditioned soul. And through his devotees or his books, through his temples, through his prasadam, through his holy name in the age of Kali, he's finding the opportunities for the conditioned soul, who always has this free will to choose illusion or to choose happiness. So Krishna himself, we were reading how he came as the super soul, as the Paramatma, in disguise to Vidarbha, Paranjan, in another incarnation. And in this disguise said, "Don't you remember me? I'm your old friend, the super soul. I've been with you for millions of lifetimes. Don't you recognize me? Don't you know who I am?" So this super soul is so kind that the super soul is venturing along with the living entity everywhere, everywhere the living entity goes, and always looking for the opportunity to entice the conditioned soul to come back to him, to come back and enjoy in the spiritual world and be free from the shackles of Maya. So this is the choice that is given. And later on we'll read how Lord Brahma has to purify himself after creating the illusory engagements that keep people in the material world. The process then of Krishna consciousness is to free oneself from these illusory conceptions, to know what they are, just as the Isopanishad says that we have to learn the principles of nescience along with the principles of devotion, to know what they are. Prabhupada once gave the example of someone who's successful. He said the reason someone is successful in business, for example, is that a successful person is always thinking what can go wrong. He always knows what the machinations of his enemies are. He's always calculating the price of this or the price of that, or how his enemies are going to formulate a strategy to thwart his efforts. This is the person who is successful. So in devotional service, that thing which is able to thwart us is within. It's Maya itself. And Maya makes incursions into our very minds and tells us, "You don't need to do this. You don't need to do that. This is your friend. This is your enemy." Prahlad Maharaj teaches that we should have no friends and no enemies. The Goswamis were dear to everyone, to the ruffians, to the noble alike. So what is a friend and what is an enemy? In devotional life, everyone should be one's friend, but sometimes one's friends are actually one's enemies, or one's enemies are actually one's friends. Sometimes it is said that if one surrounds oneself with friends or admirers or sycophants, that or yes men, that they will dull your intelligence. And if you surround yourself with enemies, they will tell you what's wrong with you. "Oh, you should have done this, you should have done that, you made this mistake, you're this, you're that." Well, those are actually, from the transcendental point of view, they're our real friends, because they're telling us what's wrong with us. Maybe not with the right aim in mind, but at least they're pointing out our weaknesses, our fallacies, our problems. And sometimes we're able to see through the eyes of them much more than we are through the eyes of our friends. And sometimes, what is a friend anyway? Is he a friend to your face? But then maybe he's walking around in Lakshmadweep talking to someone else about so-and-so did this, so-and-so did that. What kind of a person is that? So what kind of friends are there? In the material world, it's very difficult to find a friend. One of Shakespeare's characters called Gratitude thy marble-hearted friend. There's no reciprocation in the material world. No friends. Very, very poetic. And enemies, who are our enemies? Ajata Satrava Shanta. It is said that a sadhu has no enemies. Katiksha Karunaki. He has all these good qualities. Surida Sarvadehinam Ajata Satrava Shanta. No enemies. But one who's transcendental like Prahlad Maharaj, he was born in a family of people who wanted to control the world. And when he addressed his schoolmates, they were all of a very different mentality. He had learned devotional service from before birth, which is another proof that life exists even before birth. And he became very astute. So he addressed his friends as the sons of the demons. But they were his friends, even though they were demonic from our point of view. They were his friends, and they were the people who became Krishna conscious. So even those who have such bad habits, who are inimical, who are engrossed in the bodily conception of life, they can turn, they can become devotees, and they can become your best friend. He may be your worst enemy, but he becomes your best friend. I was reading in one of the Bhakti Godhead articles about, I think it was an English devotee, his first contact, maybe he's here, if you are, please forgive any inadvertent offenses, but he first saw a Sankirtan party somewhere like in Oxford Street, and his very first response was he kicked one of the boys. Who was that?
Madhavangal.
and subsequently he became a devotee. But that was the first response, just gave him a good hard kick with one of the, what do they call those, rubber boots? Rubber boys. The vision of the Madhumadikari is Ishvara Tara Dineshu Balisheshu Vishatsu Chat, is that everyone is innocent. Everyone is my son. Everyone is my daughter. Everyone is my friend. That's the vision. Yakarodi Samajama, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Once I had to go on a radio program. Well, I didn't have to go. I wanted to go, but it was a big radio station that reached four or five states from California. And the subject of the day, being discussed among four religionists, a priest, a rabbi, someone from the Protestant faith, and myself, was, can you love a killer? That was the topic. So the moderator, this is a very popular station, it has millions of people listening to it, asked the question, he posed it, this was in the wake of one serial killer, someone who murdered and dismembered about 20 women or something, really horrible thing. And does your religion allow you to love such a person? Or more correctly phrased, are you allowed to hate such a person? That was really what he wanted to know. Can you hate someone who is so vile? So that was a very interesting discussion. And I had to try to get the point across that everybody, it's like avichet sudaracharo, you know, if no matter what kind of sin you might have committed, once you've corrected yourself and aimed yourself in the right direction, then you must be considered sadhu-eva-samantabhya. You must be considered a saintly person. So that was a very interesting exercise in what in right and wrong. And I had to try to get it across that everyone has the potential to become saintly or pure. And it was very interesting to see that the other people present had a very difficult time seeing this. Because actually I believe that in Christian theology there is, what is it, contrition, confession, redemption. There's a threefold process by which all sins can be forgiven. But there seemed to be some kind of a line that you would cross, after which you'd have to burn in the sin, and what's it called, hellfire and brimstone forever and ever and ever. But anyway, that was an interesting way to talk about what are friends and what are enemies and what is good and what is bad. So ultimately, we have the Bhagavad Gita to turn to and so many wonderful books wherein the deepest questions of right and wrong are exercised. Are you going to fight? And is fighting ever good? So, and in the beginning, what is really wrong is it's the misconception, the illusory idea, the sense of identifying with the self, the sense of false ownership. These are the root of what we might call wrong and evil. So the Krishna conscious process is a complete, it's a comprehensive understanding of what is good, what is bad, how to act, what is time, what is God, and how does one actually make meaningful decisions in life. This is the great bequeathment that Prabhupada has conferred upon us to study in depth his books to understand what is the real nature of existence and what are the solutions to the problems of life. How can they be addressed? So I'll stop there. Any questions? I'll read these two verses. Sri Maitreya said, O learned Vidura, so far I have explained to you the glories of the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his feature of Kala. Now you can hear from me about the creation of Rama, the reservoir of all knowledge. Rama first created the nation engagements like self-deception, the sense of death, anger after frustration, the sense of false ownership, and the illusory bodily conception or forgetfulness. Of course, we don't walk around much more heat anymore, do we?
Yeah.
He'll feel lame.
If someone finds oneself in that situation, they catch themselves talking in a negative way and analyzing everything in terms of what's happening, how can they recognize it?
Well, Rupa Goswami gives us some hints. That we should maintain our level of enthusiasm at all times and be confident and patient, properly associate and not improperly associate and follow the regulated principles. If we pattern our lives after the role models that have been established for us in the Bhagavatam, like Prahlad Maharaj and others who didn't make distinctions or wouldn't want to hear about the wrong. And Maharaj Yudhisthira was asked by King Parikshit. King Parikshit was asked who is it that was torturing this animal, and he didn't want to say. He was going to chastise Kali, and when he was inquiring. Who is this person who is torturing the cow? It was difficult to find out because one who names the sinner is said to commit the same sin as that is being described. In other words, if you name the sinner or commit an ad hominem attack, so to speak, it is equivalent to committing the same sin. So I'm just saying there are many types of role models who are beyond naming something or someone who is sinful. So these are the role models we have to follow. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada also said that we should try to see the good qualities in everyone. And there are bad qualities and good qualities in almost everyone. If we look hard, we can find faults. So the activities in the lives of the great saints are ones who just saw the good in everyone, who didn't see anything, and who were free from fault finding, in other words. So if your question is how do we correct this in ourselves, we just have to get in the habit. It's like enthusiasm. Sometimes we don't feel enthusiastic to do something, but Rupa Goswami says we should be enthusiastic. So if we just act enthusiastic, we become enthusiastic. If we don't feel like dancing, but we just start to do it anyway, then we become enthusiastic. So if we feel like criticizing someone, but we just force ourselves not to do it and talk about the good things they have done, then that changes our attitude. So it's a matter of mental discipline, really, isn't it? That we have to avoid things that are unhealthy for us and discipline ourselves to speak of the good and find the good in everyone. Once Prabhupada said, someone was saying there's so many things wrong, and he said, if you want to find fault, you'll find fault. If you want to find Krishna, you'll find Krishna. I know that sounds very simplistic, but actually it works. It works.
There are cases when we see the kind of probably to observe the bedside of someone, but not really on the size of it. And sometimes we see good and bad, but we only deal with the qualities. But at the same time, the preacher, he asked that about the discrimination. And you say, you pointed out to the viewer that it might probably he sees everyone more than himself. But the preacher has to make friends with your qualities. So I didn't quite understand why. We have to, just because it's a woman, the preachers, we have to really transcend. Even if we see something bad in someone, don't think it's an illusion. You have to see something and then say, no, there's nothing there. Or we can see something, but we don't think much about it.
Yeah, there's a book I saw on a shelf called Feel the Fear But Do It Anyway. Depends on our status of life. Basically, this is a movement for expanding, widening the circle of Krishna consciousness. And educating people about the value, the two values of life, like Prabhupada writes in his original seven items for the constitution of ISKCON. So according to our statute, if we are brahmacharis, if we're householders with children, if we're sannyasis, if we're married women, if we're single, everybody's a little different. And some have to be in a position of management, some are in a position of just teaching. Some are in a position of raising a family, and some are in a position of making expositions to the general public, and some are more speaking to devotees. So in each case, it's a little different. It's not that, as I was saying, we shouldn't be an illusion that there's nothing wrong, or that the bad qualities can't overtake someone. It's generally the province of someone who's a manager, just like Prabhupada was talking about the businessman, to always see what can go wrong, and to be aware of the weaknesses that exist. But even though one is aware of the weaknesses that exist in individuals, it's not as if he's seeing the individual as an enemy, or that he's an enemy of that individual. But it's, as the Christian's theology says, one should hate the sin and not the sinner. It's not the individual, it's the incursion of the forces of illusion and false proprietorship that have somehow entered the person. Now, maybe due to weakness, but still, nonetheless, it's the force of Maya which is in making a wrong incursion. But generally, the vision of the Majjhima Adhikari is we see that people need to be educated. Just like if you're a teacher in a school, you have maybe 30 or 40 students. Some are going to be better than others. Some are slow learners. Some will go to the head of the class. Some will never get it. And some will become like an assistant teacher because they're assimilating the subject matter. Some will skip some grades. So in one sense, I was talking about this in Mayapur, it's Krishna consciousness movement is like a big hospital and we're all spiritual casualties. So we're all trying to get the cure. And one of the patients got a very severe case of whatever it might be. It's not something that becomes obsessive. Rather, we try to administer more cure in a more loving way, in a more effective way. So it's not that we're turning the blind eye to the weaknesses and the fallacies, but we're keeping. But it's a matter of not so much facts but attitudes. We're keeping the, like the teacher, he's teaching the subject matter and trying to get as many students to come along with it and learn the subject as possible. So that's generally the attitude. I think we have time for one more question.
I
Yeah.
But at the same time, Srila Prabhupada, in the follow-up, he is preaching, you know, whereas to Christian, there's quite a lot of room where Prabhupada is very strong in his preaching. And I think you could say that there's the whole group down in Glastonbury who are chanting 24 hours a day. So you could say on the one for a chanting meditation 24 hours only emphasize the good parts. But on the other side there are other things that are may not be correct. So should we, you know, that if you take that approach of only seeing good, then many people would be misled, following it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it seems there's a problem when we take the bad side, we're not doing good, we're not doing bad.
Well, Prabhupada created a movement, a society, a big organization to deal with all facets. And it's like a big vehicle for getting as many people back to Krishna consciousness as possible. But there's also doors through which some people can't pass. And so there's, on the one hand, the house in which everyone can live, that you built, and on the other hand, there's the good fences making good neighbors. So it's up to us as a society, as a group, to distinguish who's in our house, like the family, who's our good neighbor, the people that can come in anytime they knock on the door, and who are always loaning and giving cups of sugar or whatnot. And then the bad neighbors, who don't ever get let in the house. We had some when I was a child. There were some neighbors who nobody liked because their house was always a mess, and the lady of the house was always out in her nightgown screaming something at the kids who were supposed to be bad, and it was just a mess. You know, I mean, it was, everybody felt embarrassed by them. So it's a power of discrimination that we have to use, and we have to hearken to the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and the way he wanted his society run. And sometimes in order to just make these kinds of distinctions, we have to delve very deeply into what Prabhupada has taught us, what he has said. And this requires a lot of research, and very honest and comprehensive research sometimes, not just pulling out a quote and using it. So it's, you know, it's a big topic, it's a fine line, but these are some of the ways that distinctions have to be made. So on that note of a very complex topic, I think we'll end the class. Thank you very much for your attention. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.